Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Stiff Upper Lip Podcast. We're recording a couple days late because it is officially the first day of, well, it's not officially, I guess. It's the second day since the trade deadline passed, I think. Was the trade deadline yesterday?
The first day. The first day of the rest of your lives.
The first day of the rest of the NFL season. Lots of news happened. It was a bit of a strange trade deadline, I think. Wasn't quite as spicy as it could have been, but there was still plenty of moves. Justice Vihander today is myself, and then joining me is Ed, who is taking the reins while Max is off ill and Sam is off tootling some trombones. How are you doing, Ed?
I'm good, man. I'm excited for the, you know, two-thirds of the OG lineup of the podcast.
Yeah, it's, because that whole first season, it was just me, you and Emma, really, for, like, the vast majority of the season.
And when Sam could be asked.
Yeah, I think he did the pilot, he did, like, episode 3, and then he did one in, like, week 14 or something.
Yeah, we didn't hear from him again until the playoffs. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Famously, anti-Giants with how that trajectory goes. But yeah, it's just me and Ed, which I think works out for the best anyway, because this is going to be a very Vikings heavy episode, given how most of the news could just sort of pile back into the Minnesota Vikings, if you're sort of catching my drift. And we'll start, really, since I've already brought up, with the big news coming into the trade deadline that then led to a trade that happened. Kirk Cousins, the Minnesota Vikings quarterback and the ever-healthy quarterback in the NFL, probably perennially underrated by, like, people that aren't me, you, and Mina Kimes. In terms of, like, trusting that he is actually very good outside of those, like, narrative games. He has torn his Achilles, so he's joining Aaron Rodgers in COVID-denying and in Achilles anguish.
Achilles / COVID purgatory. Yeah, it's... I feel sad for him, first and foremost. I feel like, obviously, he didn't even have an injury in college. This is like the first experience he has of being on IR or even really missing games. So I kind of I hope this isn't the last time we've seen him in a Vikings jersey, if I'm honest. Just because there aren't many opportunities where you can genuinely say, you know, this is a franchise QB, I suppose. Granted, it's an opportunity that no one wanted to see, to talk about the future and to say that at 36 years of age, Kirk isn't it. Kirk's very much was the present until about 4 days ago. But they've got Jaren Hall on the roster. I'm interested to see what he can do. I don't suggest that he'll play out of his mind. I think that what needs to happen in this scenario, and I've sort of been over it a little bit with everyone else, is a two true outcome situation where you either already have the QB of the future on the roster, or you give him a try and it doesn't work out, and then you can go and get the QB of the future. Like, I know that we're going to sprinkle the pot later and talk about the Vikings picking up Josh Dobbs, but I don't think Josh Dobbs should be allowed to start simply because, you know, I want to see what they have in Hall.
I mean, shouldn't be allowed to start is a very, it's a very, very good way of putting it. But yeah, I think you're probably right to be sort of more, if we're going to be potentially risking just losing these games anyway, because, like, I don't think that Josh Dobbs is going to be enough to win the Vikings masses. Like, there's still a reason why the Cardinals, despite being spicy this year, are currently heading for the number one overall pick. It's because, like, they can't trust that quarterback player is going to be very good and that the defense is going to hold up and stuff. But, like, it feels like the Vikings can't really expect Josh Dobbs to be a savior in this scheme, this sort of quickly into his Vikings career. So, yeah, I think you're sort of right in the sense of you might as well see whether or not there's anything there in Hall. What? When did Hall get drafted? Like, what round?
So he was a fifth. He was a fifth round rookie last year out of BYU. So I think that he didn't play particularly well in the preseason. First and foremost, he had a couple of rough starts, and against the Packers, he didn't. He wasn't exceptional, but I think. It sort of goes to another point that I want to talk about with Kirk, if I can, so I'll circle back around to it. But throughout playing for the Vikings, Kirk's had one or more of Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen, and Justin Jefferson's catch passes, right? And I think we could be in the consensus to say that at one stage or another, every one of those guys has been a top five wide receiver in the NFL. Now, he's never not had that, and he's never not had a good running game, whether it be like Dalvin Cook or like Mattison spotting him. It's... This year, this last game, he was thrown to Jordan Addison, who was in his seventh game. He was thrown to Brandon Powell. He was thrown to KJ Osborne. Like, and he was making those guys look like world beaters, but... The situation for a rookie QB to go into perhaps isn't the best, like without that established number one, without Jefferson, and like obviously with Jefferson, I'm not sure Hall will be able to make the kind of throws that Kirk makes on a regular basis. But I don't know. It's more a thing to say Kirk's maybe had the best until that injury. He was having maybe the best two or three game stretch of his whole career, and.
That's quite a sort of weird way to put it. Do you want to like elaborate on it? Because obviously you've watched the Vikings a lot more than me, but it didn't quite look like it to me. But you were paying a closer eye, really.
The best single one-off game I've ever seen Kirk Cousins play was it was a regular season game in Philly. And I think they hit like three or four deep touchdowns to Diggs and Thielen.
I remember, I specifically remember this game because we were ragging on, which cornerback was it? Sidney Jones, was it? Who just got torched.
Sidney Jones and was it Ronald Darby and Rodney McLeod? And...
Yeah. And I think I feel like we'd done a recording on a Sunday where like the London game was going on, and then you were like, oh, well, we'll watch like Red Zone or we'll watch like the Vikings game or something. And we just watched Kirk Cousins just dime the ever-living crap out of the Eagles. Like it felt like every time that he dropped back to pass, there was Diggs over the top. I don't know what Diggs' stat line ended up at the end of the game, but it was terrifying.
It was pretty monstrous. But I think that's my point. Like, Kirk's always had a strong running game to fall back on and the help of a like all-world wide receiver or two. And in the past couple of games, it doesn't matter. His accuracy and his command of the offense, like, it's not the kind of like, wow, Justin Herbert has a howitzer for an arm type football. It's like ball control, putting the ball in the receiver's hands, making the best of it on third down. I think, over the past two games, until Kirk got injured, he was 19 of 24 on third down. And I mean, that's conversions, not just like completions. And like, if that's not, you know, the outstanding football, then I don't really know what is. Even if you're not scoring the points and putting up the gaudy numbers necessarily that they did, you know, when they were like dropping 40 on teams. I just but yeah, the organization is at this enormous crossroads. It's a weird one. I personally want to see what Jaren Hall can do. And I suppose while we're on the subject, if we can just briefly talk about it. Man, the Packers would dreck. I'm sorry, Max. You're a good friend, but your team, like, consigned them to the, I don't know, the recycle bin. They're done.
Shut the hell up!
I'll see you in hell!
I think that sums it up pretty nicely. But, yeah. A fair assessment, especially of that Packers game. We're not going to dive too deep into the Packers performance, I don't think, because more news to come onto. But I do want to ask you just quickly, sort of, you've briefly alluded to what you want to see the Vikings do at the quarterback position, but with Kirk now, going to be a free agent, unless the Vikings like get him re-signed or something, what do you see being the case for Minnesota going forward, especially with and we'll sort of mention it in a bit, the trade of sending Ezra Cleveland to the Jags, trading for Josh Dobbs, and obviously also having this young quarterback that it didn't really show too much in a very limited run. What is your sort of hope, or maybe if I could get you to try and do like a brief plan for the next like two seasons that you'd like to see them follow?
A brief plan for the next two seasons. Okay. The first thing I'd do is I'd give Cousins another year behind the wheel. I think that he's more than earned it. I think that he was playing at a impossibly high level before his injury. And I think that he, as weird to say it, because we think he's a bit of a herb, like, truth be told, like, he has such a strong influence on the locker room that it would be strange to sort of, it would make sense to keep him at the helm, and perhaps in the draft, you know, you're looking at, if Hall plays well, then, you know, perhaps Cousins could be a high value backup, like, for 1 year. If Hall plays poorly, then draft a young guy and have him sit behind Cousins for a year. Because unless, like, circumstances force teams' hands, like, I personally don't think that rookie QBs should start their first year. I think they should sit their first year. Obviously, CJ Stroud's proving me wrong, but yeah, that's what I'd do. That's what I'd do over the next 2 years. I think draft a QB. If Jaren Hall can't play the guitar, if he can play the guitar, keep Cousins around another year anyway to keep showing him the ropes.
Yeah, that's fair.
For all of the weirdness surrounding Kirk, and like for all of the, you know, strange affectations, like he is sort of like a model professional in terms of keeping himself healthy and sort of making sure that he's ready and prepared for every game.
Yeah, keeping himself all perspexed up and ready to go.
But there's a reason why, you know, the Panthers are paying over the odds for Andy Dalton this year, and it's because he has the veteran expertise to help Bryce Young along the way.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, that sounds like a fairly decent plan. So you heard it here first, Quezzy. Extend Kirk Cousins for another year and then draft a guy.
Extend the guy.
Resign. Okay, cool. Well, I know two people that won't be getting re-signed, and that is Josh McDaniels and Dave Ziegler, who have both been fired unceremoniously by the Las Vegas Raiders mere hours after the trade deadline, while all of the reporters were getting a well-earned night's kip. Yes, Josh McDaniels, who in his tenure basically botched essentially everything to do with being a head coach, not to the sort of extent of like you could write a book about it like a sort of Urban Meyer, but definitely deserving of losing his job, and with all of the locker room unrest, as well as with the roster construction put together by Dave Ziegler to acquire, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo, which is clearly not working, as shown on Monday Night Football. They have both been kicked out of the big sphere and left to wander the streets and left to wander the strip.
Yeah, I mean, this is
a jar.
These are the guys behind benching Derek Carr for Jarrett Stidham last year. Like, do you remember when the news that John Gruden had re-signed for that like 10-year, $100 million contract?
Yeah.
And we thought to ourselves, well, the contract is a little bit of an albatross, but like, this franchise has a direction.
And yeah. It was a direction that was, like, unfortunately, like 2003, but it was at least a direction.
But do you know what I mean? Like, for a little while, there were results and there was momentum, and then the Mike Mayock draft started to happen.
But
you know, it feels like they had a direction for a little bit, and now they feel like this impossibly rudderless ship with no eye on the future and no eye on the present, which is why, I mean, it has to be that Mark Davis decided that they weren't active enough. It could have been buying or it could have been selling at the deadline, but the fact is they did nothing with a woefully inadequate roster with a few stars on it. Like,
yeah.
Openly mutinous stars like Davante Adams and Max Crosby.
Yeah, especially with like those two names in particular, and like as well Josh Jacobs, who I know that they did they put the fifth year option on him, or like they got him re-signed up for a year or something. He's probably
He signed an extension.
Okay, well, it feels like it's those three versus the rest of the roster. At the moment, I couldn't really tell you anybody else that's been a high point for the Raiders this year. Oh, tell a lie. I know one person who's been a high point, and that's Robert Spillane. But whether or not that's off of like McDaniel's coaching or just a guy that's desperate to not lose his position in the NFL, like, we'll have to see. But yeah, team was an absolute shambles. Coaching decisions that like could have gotten anyone fired in that week. Like, remember that Raiders Steelers game from earlier in the year where McDaniels kicked the field goal down 8, to put them down 8, and it was like, okay, why did you do that?
Yeah,
it didn't. You're still gonna need a touchdown and a 2-point conversion. You're on the 8-yard line. What are you doing? That could have potentially gotten him fired right there and then, and I'd argue should have been. But the real mistake was, to me, hiring Josh McDaniels in the first place to be a head coach, because this is what, his fourth crack at being a head coach now?
I don't think, it can't be as many as four, can it?
Well, I definitely know for sure that he was fired for being dreadful with the Broncos. Maybe he's been fired from positions twice, but they were offensive coordination jobs as opposed to head coaching. But yeah, this is a guy that has shown ineptitude twice now at the head coaching position and probably shouldn't be entrusted with a franchise.
Well, I mean, everything's cyclical, you know. The backwaters, he'll sort of like churn around in the waters for a little bit, then wash up on the shores of New England in a minute or two.
Yeah, he will. Because the Bill O'Brien experience isn't really working out there either. It's just a constant revolving door of expatriates leaving, getting fired, and coming back.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that is the sort of big news. But it's weird that it happened like on a random Tuesday, like mere hours after the deadline. Like you suspect that maybe this was entirely because they just didn't make a single move. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see.
That's supported by the fact that it's both of them. Like, if it was on-field performance, fire the head coach. If it was poor, you know, if it was poor player development, fire the GM.
Yeah.
But, like, both of them suggests it's a cleaning house.
Yeah. And speaking of cleaning house, we have another franchise that had a little cleaning house moment of its own, but maybe in a slightly less planned circumstance. Like, maybe the Raiders were planning on getting rid of McDaniels and Ziegler, but I don't know whether or not the Commanders were quite planning on losing both of their starting edge rushers in one fell swoop. But on the deadline, the first move that came through was that Montez Sweat had been traded to Chicago for a second round pick, which, you know, I think people probably agreed with, at least from the Commanders' side, of being like, okay, you got like fairly decent value for Montez Sweat. He'd already said his goodbyes and stuff on FedEx Field. There was talk that he'd, you know, been very well aware that they were going to probably keep Chase Young instead of Montez Sweat. And that, I think, makes a lot of sense from a franchise standpoint. And then the news broke, what, about an hour and a half later, that Chase Young was traded to the San Francisco 49ers for a compensatory third round pick. So not even the Niners' actual third rounder, but the pick that they got awarded in the compensatory draft. So it's essentially more like a fourth round pick. So the Commanders, instead of keeping hold of, you know, one of their fairly young, very productive edge rushers, traded both of them away in the space of about an hour. And that's what I sort of mean about it maybe being unplanned, is they've obviously just got new ownership, and Josh Harris, who is there in the Philadelphia 76ers trust the process times, where they traded away a lot of talent. It was all about tanking and openly trying to assemble draft picks and basically resetting the whole franchise. I don't know whether or not Riverboat Ron will have had any say in this, however, because it leaves the Commanders very thin on the D-line, especially at the sort of edge positions. I know that obviously they just signed Daron Payne to quite a big contract and stuff, and that's sort of the bit that's maybe a little questionable to me, is what are the Commanders planning to do? And they are trading away like their previous, what, second overall pick, third overall pick, to the 49ers?
First overall pick, Chase Young.
Was he a first? Well, there you go. Yeah, I'm terrible with when it comes to remembering like which spot some guys are from. Like, obviously, like certain players you can be very well aware, but
it's worth noting, by the way, do you know who the compensatory pick's for? Because this is a fun one. It's for...
Is it for Javon Hargrave?
Nope.
Okay, go on.
The compensatory pick that the 49ers have now traded to the traded to the Commanders comes off the back of them losing their back office member of staff, Ran Carthon,
to the Tennessee Titans
to be their GM.
Oh my god. Bloody Ran Carthon, star of last week's episode of You're the GM. Crazy.
Maybe just briefly to sort of elucidate us on what it's like to be the equivalent value of one Chase Young.
I just don't understand with the Commanders. It made sense, the Montez Sweat one. In fact, I was more wondering what was going on with Chicago, and they trading for Montez Sweat while it being a rental, and potentially trading away Jalen Johnson, which never happened because eventually like the time ran out, and they were able to keep hold of him. So, you know, but at the time I was like, why are you giving up a second round pick that's going to be like a top 40 pick for Montez Sweat? Like, that doesn't make sense. It's great value for the Commanders. And then they traded away Chase Young to the 49ers for a 3.9th round pick. I don't get it. I'm not entirely sure, but I'm not the GM of a floundering to potentially rebuilding NFL franchise. So, you know, where am I meant to come in?
I think the final point to have to sort of discuss on that is, does that make you think that inside the building they think Sam Howell is the answer or not?
See, I don't know. And it's because they're obviously trying to acquire a lot of, like, trade value with these. Like, obviously, they wouldn't just ship Sweat and Young away. They wanted something in return, and with what's going to end up turning out to be like a, at the very least, mid to high second round pick, that feels like they like somebody else in the draft. And their roster feels weird, where it's they clearly have a hole, which to me is, I'm not really fully bought in on Sam Howell yet. Like, he has those games where he looks fantastic. Like, we showered him with praise after the Eagles game in, what, week 3? And then he'll have, like, 4 weeks in a row where he genuinely looks sort of around the Desmond Ridder tier. It's like, I can't really figure it out with the consistency for Howell, and maybe it's that, but, like, the weapons that they've got with him... Yeah, go on.
I think Sam Howell is what people expected Justin Herbert to be when he came into the league.
Yeah, maybe. And then obviously because Herbert was, like, much more talented and actually finally got to use it. Like, maybe, you know. Yeah, it's just... I can't really think what they might be looking at unless they're looking at, like, an inside linebacker or a cornerback, but they've just drafted Emmanuel Forbes, who is already potentially seeing a reduction in snaps at the moment, just because, like, I don't know whether or not he's just not quite picking it up, or he's just not physical enough yet and needs to, like, spend some more time in the gym or whatnot. But, like, their defense feels fine outside of, now, ironically, edge rusher. Linebackers are a problem, but again, they let Cole Holcomb go for nothing. Like, I just don't really understand what the plan is. Like, they're shedding talent to acquire picks to fill holes that's left behind by the talent that they shed. But I can't really think of an obvious hole. They just aren't tying it all together right now for a couple things. It just feels weird. It just feels like a very, yeah. I don't know if they're resetting or what, but
this is the thing. They've got some pieces. Like, on offense, they've got McLaurin, Samuel. Are we going to spend too long on this? They've got McLaurin, Samuel, and Jahan Dotson as wide receivers. They've got Brian Robinson. You sort of feel like that's far from the worst skill position group. It's a weird one, unless they're going to get rid of them all and just, like, burn it down and start again in the Sixers image.
I also don't get why they're sellers anyway. Like, if you take away the losses to the Eagles, they're 3-3, which feels like a reasonable team. And obviously, like, the Eagles are meant to go deep in the playoffs. Like, it just feels weird. Like, teams don't quite feel like they're making the right decisions at various points with some of these moves that have happened. For, like, where they're evaluating what their franchise is at the moment, like, the Bears being buyers despite being 2-6 on a rental piece, but the Commanders being sellers despite being 3-5, but, like, two of those losses against the hardest team that they're going to face all year. Like, it feels like nobody's quite sure where they sit. Maybe this is just because the whole league feels weird outside of, like, four teams. It's crazy.
Yeah. But what is it? There's, like, 8 starting QBs left. Like, I think everyone feels like, let's punt on this season and make good for next season. Yeah. I actually don't have a problem with Sweat going to the Bears, and I think I've thought about it a lot, and then I realised I was thinking about it too much, and what it actually boils down to is bad team get good football player get better. Yeah. And I'm all right with it when I think like when I think about it like that.
Yeah, maybe. It just depends. They need to get an extension done for him. If they get him, tied up to a deal that he wants to be paid that isn't an overpay, because there's a real risk here. I'm not very high on Montez Sweat. Like, some people are like really high on him. Like, they've got him at that sort of like 15 to 20 bracket of like edge rushers, which would be like a starting edge rusher for like anybody else in the league. Outside
absolutely
of like a
there
couple
for
teams,
him.
But I'm not. I've got him weirdly like he feels like a sort of guy that's like two steps off of making the impact play. But if you're gonna be if the Bears are gonna pay him what I think that they're probably planning on paying him, because they've got a bit of a habit of paying some of these types of players a lot of money, like Cole Kmet and. Who's the right guard? Davis, is it? That's on quite a lot of money, but
you mean James Daniels?
No,
because he went to the Steelers, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah. It's the guy that they brought in to replace him, and I can't remember his name, but he had like five horror plays in the first like 3 weeks where he'd just like run into the center and just block, ruin the whole protection. But they're paying him like $16 million a year for 3 years and stuff. So, like, if the Bears end up paying Montez Sweat, like, let's just ballpark it, like a $22 million a year figure. That's too much for a guy that's a couple steps off of being what they need him to be. Like, his best season is...
I disagree. I think he's a total package.
But his best season at 27, he's had like 8 sacks and... I think that his best strength is his pass disruption at the line with 6 passes defense in his like second season. But it feels like he's so...
You've always had monster edge rushers.
I know, but...
I'm spoiled because I had Hunter and Everson Griffin for a while. But someone like Sam, bless him, Sam would be absolutely fucking over the moon at an 8-sack-a-year guy.
Bears, Sam had Osio Mignore. Emma and the Bears had Khalil Mack, who, like, in his first season tore it up. Like, and the Bears have been spoiled by having great, like, defensive players. That's the whole deal with the Chicago Bears, is that their defense is great and the offense stinks. Like, it just feels like such a... They're going to pay him elite edge rusher money.
And I can wide receiver money.
Well, yeah, they're going to pay him elite wide receiver money, but they're also going to pay him
Poles.
Like, oh, it's, I don't get
Poles
it.
Pulls him into the. I'm just saying, he pulls him into the dressing room like as soon as they sign him, and goes, "Montez, I've got a radical idea."
You see those 6 passes defensed? Well, how about we put you at cornerback this time? No,
one of the many positions that Julian Edelman could play.
Yeah, including lacrosse. Was it lacrosse that Edelman... Oh, no, was
oh,
it...
Oh, it's always lacrosse, isn't it?
Oh, it was that Hogan that retired from the NFL to play lacrosse, wasn't it, or something? I don't know. We're getting off track.
Is it... Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I'm just not quite as high on Sweat to pay him $22 million a year, which I think that the Bears are going to do, and... It just feels like a bad move. It doesn't feel right. Anyway, moving on from the Commanders' moves, there were some other moves around the NFL. We've obviously sort of briefly touched upon Josh Dobbs, and we very briefly mentioned Ezra Cleveland moving to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Ed, what was the terms for Ezra Cleveland again?
It was a sixth. It was far below the market value for like a good run blocker. He's made steps in pass protection, but he makes his bread and butter as a run blocker. He's very good at that.
Yeah, which for the Jacksonville Jaguars as well is going to be huge, because like they're getting great production out of Travis Etienne now, and a young run blocking guard that they've just picked up for basically nothing. That feels like a steal to me.
The only thing to say is they're going to have to pay him because it's contract year. I think that's probably why they why they could sell so low, or why they could buy so low, rather.
But I think as well, like, it makes sense for the Jags to be buyers on a rental piece. Like, if God forbid, they were to treat Ezra Cleveland like a rental and then let him hit free agency, which I don't think they should. I think
God forbid.
Yeah, but they could afford to do it because, you know, this is a team that could be in a deep playoff run come the end of the year. Their defense is great, and they have a quarterback that is clearly very talented. They've got great players all around the field. This feels like a good move, but it didn't really make sense from the Vikings' perspective. What else? Leonard Williams has been sent to Seattle for, I believe, a second-round pick, was it? Or was it a third and then a fifth going the other way? Or was that the Rasul... No, that was Rasul Douglas to the Bills. Sorry, I'm getting all on a tears now because we've got...
It was just such a wild day.
Yeah.
The blockbusters were coming thick and fast.
Yeah, and we've spent way too long talking about Montez Sweat and Chase Young and Kirk Cousins. Yeah, just an overall fairly reasonable day. The Detroit Lions made a splash as well by getting a new pass catcher in the hopes that, you know, one of them might stay healthy for long enough into the playoffs, because weirdly injury riddled team right now, especially at like wide receiver. You never know when the bug might strike Amon-Ra, who at any point could go down with an injury. So getting Donovan Peoples-Jones from a certain team feels like a good move as well. We can now talk about DPJ again on the show. But yeah, it was a day where lots of moves of varying significance happened, is how I can best summarize it.
I think we've hit the wall where the ones that we haven't yet discussed are a shade below significant.
Yes. All right. Last bit of news then in that case. Desmond Ridder has been officially benched. It was halfway through the Falcons game where he was sort of taken out and Taylor Heinicke was brought in, and it was rumored to be an injury, but then Desmond Ridder was fine on the sidelines and they were sort of saying that he was being held out for precaution, and now it's been confirmed as of today that Taylor Heinicke will be the Falcons starter in the game against the Minnesota Vikings in week 9. So Desmond Ridder's time in the NFL feels like it is coming it's coming to the edge of what would be considered sustainable. Maybe not the greatest draft pick, but, you know, does it feel like the Falcons have given up a bit early on Ridder, or would you say that this is the right move for Atlanta?
On performance, no, but I'm always going to be a guy who says, like, give these guys time to develop. Like, I think that the NFL is far too quickly to, like, wash the hands of a guy and say next man up, especially at the QB position. But I think with Ridder, the criticisms coming into the league was, well, he doesn't have a big arm, and he doesn't, you know, he doesn't make splash plays with his arm or with his legs, but what he does do is sort of look after the ball and give you good chances to win. Like, he's accurate, he throws with anticipation, and we've seen that accuracy and that anticipation sort of melt away. I think that he is absolutely bereft of confidence, and while benching him, like, might initially sting, I think that, yeah, having him sit and not be exposed to the bright lights every weekend might be a bit of a blessing.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right in the sense of the pre-draft tape on Ridder was these question marks that have been there the whole time, like in the process of now starting to really come to light, but also the strengths of, like you say, not turning the ball over, playing at the very least smart football. Whether or not it was going to be like exciting or winning football was a different matter, but like the context of being able to at least keep the Falcons in games, it feels like that's really come away, and they're winning very much in spite of him at the moment. So yeah, I'd say that it's at least the right move to have him like sit again. Whether or not he goes back in next year or before the end of the season, like a bit like how Zach Wilson was sort of told not to come back to the Jets locker room and to just go and clear your head, and then like the plan was to have him sit behind Aaron Rodgers, but obviously like that went out the window three plays into the season, and now Zach Wilson's being in the exact same position again. Like, maybe this is the right move to at least just give Desmond Ridder just a bit more time to get up to speed with the NFL, because he got thrust in very quickly because Marcus Mariota couldn't play the guitar, and Desmond Ridder is currently slamming that guitar against 280-pound linebackers every chance that he gets. So
yeah, sort of feels like, yeah, give him a wellness check, a Phoebe Bridges CD in 2 weeks in like a remote cabin and see where he is after that.
I think maybe we could all do with a 2 week wellness break and a Phoebe Bridges session. So yeah. All right. Let's wrap up with the news then, and move on then to our other segment with another one of those mandated cutaway breaks.
Yes, we are returning to well, it needs no introduction, but I'm going to give it one anyway. It's 2022's Mr. Caviar Fingers and Mr. Dusty Knees. It's a metric of my own division, and it basically takes QB production, QB output, which is passing yards and rushing yards, and measures that against their cap hit to see who was the most valuable QB to their team. It's quite a fun little metric, I think. Often what happens with Mr. Caviar Fingers is it's a marker of who's due to get paid, and it's a marker of which teams, you know, construct rosters well. Because if you can get good value, high impact QB play consistently at low value, you know, you're laughing, aren't you? So yeah, is there anyone you want to discuss?
Well,
Mr. Chappell, first and foremost.
I guess the real best place to start would be with Mr. Caviar Fingers himself. Who was it who won this prestigious award for the 2022-23 NFL season?
Okay, I could give you a couple of names here, because there's a couple of guys right at the top who've cost their teams an astronomical amount, but you may decide to spare them, to give them a stay of execution on this one when I tell you their names. At number one, at a mind-boggling $32,417.19 per yard, we have Gardner Minshew, a former old Dusty Knees himself when he was a sixth-round pick and got playing time with the Jags in Philly, because they're paying him $2.5 million to make 666 yards last year. You know, and he was healthy for every game, because health for every game is an important fact, is an important metric. It's not fair to sort of be like, oh, look at you, I don't know, Colt McCoy only being available for four games with a higher cap hit. So what do you think? Do you think that Gardner Minshew belongs there? Or do you think that because he was a backup to Jalen Hurts, he should be stricken from the record?
Well, I think that he should be stricken here, because you've got him down as eligible for 17, but for a guy that was sat behind the clear, obvious number one, and a cap hit that is still measly compared to other quarterbacks, I would say that Gardner Minshew should be spared the honour of Mr. Caviar Fingers, you know. So hit me with number two.
Number two, Mr. Carson Wentz, the former QB of the Washington Commanders, who was benched mid-season. Eligible for 12 games, played in 8 of them. 1,841 yards. So for each single one of those yards, the Commanders paid $23,054.19. Is that... I mean, the silence says it all, really.
Yeah, that's...
The silence there.
That's quite a baffling number. I can't remember what Caviar Fingers in years past may have hit, but $23,000 per yard per game feels that feels very caviar-y, especially for a guy that was meant to actually start like Carson Wentz was, because obviously it wasn't meant to be that he only played 8 games on the year. He was meant to be the quarterback at least for the season because they traded for him. So yeah, I'd say on that metric and that metric alone that Carson Wentz is the recipient of the 2022-2023 Mr. Caviar Fingers. Yeah.
Ooh, look at his hands.
All right. Calm down now.
I think, do you want to discuss He Who Must Not Be Named at this point?
He Who Must Not Be Named must not be named, but the cap hit that he had this year was on the, or last year, was on the lower end. But I think in years going forward, when that number jumps up to $60 million guaranteed, then it must be...
Well,
mentioned at the very least.
Put it this way, Thomas. If we are choosing to discount Gardner Minshew and to a lesser degree Trey Lance, which it seems fair to considering, you know, tore his leg off, He Who Must Not Be Named is third in the Mr. Caviar rankings, despite only having a cap hit of $9,395,000. His dollars per yard was $21,971.
Yeah, that is that's impressive. That is impressively bad.
When you consider that that's probably like, I mean, that's more than minimum wage.
Yes. It is, actually. Wow.
Yeah, to put that into context.
Yeah, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to say that he does belong in here, and we've already spoken about him now. So let's jump to the bottom then and see who is old Dusty Knees then in that case.
Well, there's a few contenders here. I think the top sort of 6 or 7 are all games that we're all, sorry, all names we're all going to recognize. One guy who's down there, costing the Steelers just $1,192 per yard, is one Kenneth Pickett.
Yeah, I feel like for guys especially on the rookie deal, that will make a lot of sense, and Kenny is on the rookie deal. So good job on being cheap, Kenneth.
Well, in that case then, the lowest guy who isn't on the rookie deal, and perhaps an honorary Dusty Knees, even though there's a couple of guys that are lower down the rankings here, with a cap hit of just $3.5 million. Geno Smith costs the Seahawks $761 per yard.
$761. That is
which is mind-blowing for the production that he generates.
Yeah. Yeah, that is baffling. Like, $761 per yard for Geno. Who else is down in that sort of bracket then? So we've already established that Kenny was 1,192. Any others for old Dusty Knees? Anyone better than Geno?
This is better. At number two, despite Gardner Minshew, if we like I said, choose to include him being the worst, Philly also have the second best, because Jalen Hurts, a cap hit of $1.643 million. The Philadelphia Eagles last year, in an MVP caliber year, paid Jalen Hurts $368 per yard.
Yeah, that is mind-boggling, considering that, like you say, MVP sort of caliber, and I mean, he made it to a Super Bowl, and arguably, I think, should have been Super Bowl MVP in that one as well. Baffling how cheap his contract is. It makes it sound like you were saying that there was somebody that was even slightly better than Jalen Hurts in the dusty knees.
I mean, it's less than a full dollar. Less than a full dollar in it, but Houston Texans backup and former starter Davis Mills comes in with a cap hit of $1.1 million.
Oh my god.
A net 3,226 yards. Davis Mills cost the Houston Texans $367.90 per yard.
Which is quite baffling, actually, when you sort of look at that Jalen Hurts had about 1,250 yards more than Davis Mills, and it still only boiled down to less than a dollar, less than 50 cents between the two guys. Very impressive. But yes, so does that mean then that Davis Mills is Senor Dusty Knees?
Yeah, Davis Mills is Dusty Knees for this year, with a nod to Geno, sort of like perhaps the veteran Dusty Knees.
Interesting. Ed seems to have gone. Technical difficulties permit, that this is sort of where we call it here. I guess we'll revisit Mr. Caviar Fingers and Senor Dusty Knees going forward at any point. Sorry if this was a very odd jobby sort of episode as Vihander, where we didn't really have a proper segment lined up. It was always going to feel a little bit like this. But yes, we will be back with another episode next week and get hold of Max and Sam, hopefully, and try and actually get you some proper segments back, like how we've been doing all season. Thank you, everybody that has been listening, by the way. It has been very much appreciative. Shout out to the listenership in Belgium, by the way. You guys have been real clutch right in the early parts of the season. I will see all of you guys in the next one, and hopefully I'll have some friends with me who won't have their connection die because it's been the Stiff Upper Lip Podcast. Yeah.